You're listening to Podcast by Committee, produced by Starting Five Productions. And now, here's Andrew and Max Brill.
Thank you, Mason, as always, for the introduction. Welcome back to Podcast by Committee. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew Brill.
And I'm Max Brill.
Max, we have a potpourri of things to talk about this week. The NBA playoffs, I guess you could say they've begun. The play-in rounds, anyway, have begun. And we'll talk about those rounds and we'll get to the first round matchups. The NHL season is about to conclude as we record this Wednesday night. And those matchups are all set as well. So we can give you a quick NHL preview. The WNBA draft has taken place, and as we expected, Caitlin Clark has gotten number one overall. We'll talk a little bit about the NBA draft. And the Masters Golf Tournament has come and gone, and we'll talk about this year's champion, and he's got his second green jacket. So we'll talk about that as well. But Max, let's get started with the NBA play-in round. It's the play-in round, and then we'll get to the first round as well. So we just watched the Philadelphia 76ers knock off the Miami Heat in the East. And so we know that the New York Knicks will take on the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, this was a back-and-forth matchup in the end, but the Sixers came out on top after trailing by 14 at one point during this game. Jimmy Butler just was not the Jimmy Butler of old. In fact, you can argue that the MVP of this game was Nick Batum, 76ers role player at this point in his career, who averaged 5.5 a game during the regular season, poured it on from three. He had 6 3-pointers. He played outstanding defense. He added some clutch rebounds. It was a really, really well-played game from him, and I think he was kind of an X factor for them going into this game. His ability to shoot is well documented. The defense has really been good and was excellent in this game. And I still don't know that the Sixers will be able to beat the Knicks. I think that you look at how this team played today, and it was enough to get by the Heat, who, I mean, their flaws are well documented, but is it enough to take down the Knicks? I don't think the answer to that is yes. The last time these two teams matched up fully healthy was in January, and the Knicks dismantled the 76ers. Joel Embiid doesn't quite look like himself, and they have Tyrese Maxey, who's a candidate for most improved player this season. Buddy Hield obviously can shoot the three, but I don't think that the 76ers are making it out of the first round. And unfortunately for whoever won this matchup, maybe this is just my Knicks fan bias, but I think the same fate would befall whoever it is that ended up winning this, is they're probably getting bounced in pretty short order by the Knicks. So Sixers move on here. They have a date now with the Knicks at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. The Heat will face the winner of the Hawks matching up against the Bulls. That has just tipped off as we record this. We're recording on Wednesday. So they'll have another chance, the Heat, to get into the playoffs, and Jimmy Butler will have one more opportunity to show off why Playoff Jimmy is his moniker, because he wasn't quite able to do it on Wednesday night. And the winner of that matchup will move on to play the Celtics in the first round.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler wasn't exactly healthy in this game. Hobbled a little bit, so we'll see how he does against the winner of the Atlanta Hawks-Chicago Bulls game. Hats off to the 76ers in this game, because, Max, where do I always say that a lot of these close games are won and lost? The free throw line. Yep. 76ers hit 21 of 23 for 91.3% from the free throw line. And this is where the Heat lost it. Look, this ended up being a one-point game. They missed 5 free throws. And you just, when you only take 19, you can't miss 5 free throws, 73.7% from the free throw line. So that's where this game was won and lost. The 76ers shot just a slightly lower percentage than the Heat at just about 41.9% to 42.2%, almost identical, 35.9% from downtown, 34.3% from downtown. And it came down to free throws, and the 76ers hit him. So that's where you go from here, and I agree with you. I think this is a good matchup for the Knicks. I think either one of these teams would have been a good matchup for the Knicks, but the Knicks are playing good basketball right now, so I think that this will be a good matchup for them no matter who they play, and it happens to be the 76ers. So the Heat or the Atlanta Hawks or the Chicago Bulls will face off against the team with the best record in the Eastern Conference, and that would be the Boston Celtics. So that still has yet to be decided. We go to the other side of the ledger, Max, the Western Conference side, and the Los Angeles Lakers picked off the New Orleans Pelicans, and Zion Williamson is questionable for the next game, and they'll get a chance to still make the regular playoffs. They'll take on the Sacramento Kings because the Kings eliminated the Golden State Warriors. Not a great game for the Warriors, and Klay Thompson, who was not great in that game, missed all of his three-point shots, didn't make any, and that was
big. Missed all of his field goals.
Yeah, he was 0-for-10 from the field. So this was a tough night on what could have been, and had 0 points. So what could have been Klay Thompson's last night in a Golden State Warrior uniform, it was a tough one. And the Golden State Warriors go home. Far cry from the dynasty team that has all those championships, but the Golden State Warriors are finished. The Sacramento Kings will now take on the Pelicans. And like I said before, Zion Williamson, a little bit hobbled in that last game and is now questionable, listed as questionable for that play-in game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what transpires on Thursday evening between the Pelicans and the Kings. And I think, going back to the Warriors for a moment, the Dubs dynasty, as you mentioned, has most likely played their final game together. Draymond, Steph, and Klay carried that team for a decade, basically, and they dominated the NBA over that span. It was Steph breaking records left and right, Klay joining him. I mean, he was one of the most prolific scorers when he got hot. He could just drop 60 on any given night. He had a couple of 40 and 50-point games as well. And Draymond, obviously a polarizing figure, but the floor general of sorts, directing traffic, excellent defender. I don't know that people would call him a goon, but definitely instigating from time to time. So
let's be real. Done. He was a little bit of a goon.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a goon. But, you know, good basketball player nonetheless, always contributing. And I think one of the most emblematic Draymond performances came in the final game of the regular season for them. He had a double-double and scored 0 points. That almost never happens. So an impressive showing by him. He'll stay with the Dubs, presumably. But Kings-Pelicans is the matchup to watch in the Western Conference. The winner will go ahead and face the Oklahoma City Thunder, Chet Holmgren and company out there. Kings are marginally favored in this game, but it's anyone's guess who's going to win this. My guess is that if Zion is fully healthy and plays a full slate of minutes and can be his normal self, he will be able to carry the Pelicans to the promised land, or at least to a likely first-round playoff exit versus the Thunder. But if he's not healthy, if he can't play a full slate of minutes, I think this game ends up a lot closer.
Yeah, I agree. And the winner of this game will end up playing the conference best, Oklahoma City Thunder. They actually have the same record as the Denver Nuggets, but because of the tiebreaker, the Denver Nuggets take the two. They will play the Los Angeles Lakers. And that's going to be a pretty cool matchup because the Lakers playing a little bit better, the 7-3 in their last 10 games. They've won two in a row now. Denver 6-4 in their last 10 games. This will be kind of interesting because you get playoff LeBron, but you have to tip the scale a little bit for the Denver Nuggets. But don't rule out those Lakers as the seventh seed. They could surprise you a little bit. And I think that, you know, they seem to be somewhat healthy. They seem to be somewhat rested. And look, they have a couple days off now before they have to play that first round matchup.
It's like LeBron said, on any given night, the Lakers can beat anyone, but on any given night, they can also lose to anyone. It's a very unique club. And obviously LeBron and Anthony Davis comprise two of the best players in the league, but Jokic is probably the best player in the league standing on the other side of the floor. And the Lakers just don't have the depth that is, I think, going to allow them to compete in a 7-game playoff series with the likes of the Nuggets, because in addition to Jokic, they have Jamal Murray. He averaged 32.5 and 3 steals last time that the Denver Nuggets played in the playoffs. That was over the course of a full playoff series. And of course, Jeff Green and Bruce Brown are both going to be missing, but Christian Braun and Peyton Watson have kind of taken on those roles. They're obviously not veteran leaders, but they've stepped into those role player roles, and they've done it quite well. And the Nuggets obviously are a force to be reckoned with, winning the NBA championship last year, tied for the best record in the West this year. Any team with Jokic, I think, pretty much has to be favored in a playoff series.
Interesting. I thought Jokic would be higher on the scoring list. He's 10th. LeBron James is 13th. So that'll be a good matchup there between two guys that are high on the list of most points scored per game. Obviously, Luka Doncic leads that pack, but you have Nikola Jokic with 26.4, LeBron James 25.7. So if you look at it, those two guys could cancel each other out. You have to see where the other production is coming from. Anthony Davis scores 25 a game, so that could be your answer. So if they can figure out how to contain one of those guys, I think Denver has a pretty good shot. And if that's the Denver supporting cast is going to have to come up big in this game, because you have two guys in the top 15 in scoring against one guy who's 10th in the league. So don't rule the Lakers out in this one. Don't sleep on the Lakers for sure. But I think that I have to give, with the two seed, I'd have to give Denver the edge. I don't know what the matchup is between the two teams, but you know, in the season series, but I would give Denver the edge in this one.
Most smart money has Denver advancing here in five games or less. I've seen a couple of predictions on Denver to sweep. Jokic shut down Davis last year in the playoffs. I see no reason why they can't take this. Let's move on in the Western Conference. We could talk about OKC. Their opponent isn't set, but I think it's going to be a similar story there with OKC, regardless of who they match up against. They're going to make quick work of them. Chet Holmgren has just taken the league by storm this year, and it's impressive what the NBA has done with big men. I think Chet is the prototypical NBA big man right now, because it's not the Shaqs of old. It's these taller, skinny guys who can handle the ball, who can shoot the lights out of the gym. And Chet is leading the pack here. He's done an excellent job. He leads the team in rebounds. Add in SGA, who's probably a top five player in the league at this point. I mean, he certainly was this year. He's averaging over 30 points a game and adding 6 assists and 5.5 boards. I think that this team is going to make quick work of not only whoever they face in the first round, but whoever they face between the Clippers and Mavs in the second round. This is a young team. This is a hungry team. And I think they have the pieces to make a sustained deep run in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think that 100%. Then you have the Minnesota Timberwolves going to take on the Phoenix Suns. That'll be a good matchup. Then you have the LA Clippers taking on the Dallas Mavericks. And of course, that's Luka Doncic, which is the top scorer in the league. So interesting matchups in the West. And, you know, when you go down the list and you look at the teams in the West, all of them are over 500. Can't say the same for the teams in the East. Then that's really just the last two teams, the Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. And one of those teams is going to get eliminated and have to play the Miami Heat for that eighth spot. But you have the best score in the league in the Dallas Mavericks. You have a pretty good shot at beating the Clippers. So that should be a pretty even matchup there. Both teams on losing streaks heading into the playoffs. That's not exactly where you want to be, but that's exactly where they are. You head back to the East, Max, and we took care of the Boston Celtics. We're not sure who their matchup is yet. The Knicks are going to play the 76ers. We gave them a pretty good chance of winning. The Bucks are an interesting story, and you wonder if they're healthy going into the playoffs. Lost 2 in a row, 3-7 in their last 10, not playing really good basketball, going up against the Indiana Pacers, who are 7-3 in their last 10. So that's going to be a one to watch for an upset, because it's very, very possible.
This is another kind of tale of two sides. The Bucks come into this with NBA championship aspirations, I would say, but Giannis is really not fully healthy at this point, and he's going to miss the beginning of this series. Then you look at the Pacers on the other side of the floor, another young, hungry team led by Tyrese Halliburton, who they acquired in a trade a couple of seasons ago. And I think that the Pacers, like you said, have a really decent shot to pull off the upset here. I think this series probably goes the distance. There's also the added factor of the fact that Doc Rivers somehow never manages to live up to expectations in the playoffs. I don't know how much of a factor that's going to play in this round, but I think it could result in Milwaukee making an earlier than expected exit. And I mean, look, not that I'm putting a ton of stock in Stephen A, but he said he thinks the Bucks are going to go down in the first round. I think it's really difficult when you don't have your best player available early in a playoff series to build that momentum. And I know, like, as an analytics guy, as a numbers guy, I tend to not put too much stock in things like momentum, because it's just not something that there's a statistical or numerical proof that it exists. With that being said, in the playoffs, winning on your home floor is really important. And the Bucks are going to be home to start the series, and they're going to be home without their best player. And like I said, the Pacers are a young, hungry team that certainly has the ability to make noise in the playoffs. And you don't want to start out dropping games on your home floor in the first round of all times. So this is going to be, I think, probably the most competitive series on either side of the NBA bracket between the West and the East. Pacers Bucks is going to be the one to watch. And like I said, Halliburton has been outstanding for them. Benedict Mathurin is really coming into his own. They have a bunch of really solid role players as well. I'm excited for this series. I think that the Pacers have a really decent shot to win. I don't know that I would pick them outright, but they've got about as good a shot as any, I think, to pull off an upset.
And that leaves us with the last matchup, and that's Cleveland and Orlando. And this is kind of a toss-up, although I think I give the edge to Cleveland in this matchup. They score more points. They grab more rebounds. They share the ball a little bit better. It's a Jared Allen, Paolo Banchero kind of deal, and we'll see where this one ends up. But this one, I think you flip a coin, Max, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the Magic, it feels like they kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, they've been in this rebuild for a couple of years, and now finally it feels like they're breaking out, bursting onto the scene in a big way. The Cavs are the higher seeded team, but like you said, I think a coin flip is completely reasonable. I think just generally speaking, the Eastern Conference first round matchups are going to be a little bit more competitive and a little bit more entertaining than the Western Conference first round matchups. I don't know that the Magic are going to be able to pull off the upset, but again, I think this is going to be a really entertaining series. You mentioned two of the key players here, Jared Allen and Paolo Banchero. I think the biggest difference maker is going to be how Cleveland performs on the perimeter. They are a pretty solid three-point shooting team, and I think that being able to continue to shoot the three well is going to be key for them. Orlando doesn't have a ton of excellent three-point shooters. They have some options, but that's really, I think, what it's going to come down to is, can Cleveland shoot the three well? And, I mean, you could probably say that of any series, like which team shoots the three better is going to be the team that wins it. But I think that in this series in particular, Donovan Mitchell's performance, in addition to how the team shoots from three, is going to really be the difference maker.
I mean, you look at the you know, regular season stats, Cleveland scores more points, they grab more rebounds, but their field goal percentage, slight edge to the Cavaliers, three-point percentage, slight edge to the Cavaliers, and their free throw percentage, slight edge to the Cavaliers. So you'd have to give them a slight edge in the series. So I think that's where it ends up with this series, although I expect Orlando to give it a good fight and wouldn't be surprised if this one went five or six, possibly even seven. But this one, I think, is going to go the way of the Cavaliers, but they have to play up to their potential. That's for sure.
So one of the strange, frustrating, I don't know what you want to call it, but one of the strange things about the NBA playoff setup is that the games are so far apart. So even when we're recording this next week, I mean, some series are only going to be done with three games. So there's still a lot of time even before we get into the second round and beyond. I don't know that it makes a ton of sense to make overall predictions aside from the one I'm about to make, which is that the Knicks are going to win the NBA championship. But we'll have more on that next week.
Yeah, look, nothing would make me happier. It's been a long, long time. Last time the Knicks won a championship, it was so long ago, I don't remember. So that's a long time ago. But Max, let's move on. Now that we've covered the NBA, and I won't give you the score of the Bulls game because that's long over when this comes out. But the Bulls are up by 11 in the first quarter. Let's move on to the NHL, where the playoffs in the NHL are pretty much set. We can go through those as well and give you the matchups as they are all set at this point. And the Florida Panthers will take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. This is the Eastern Conference. The Bruins and Maple Leafs, the Rangers and the Capitals. The Capitals sneaking in, and the Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. And that takes care of the Eastern Conference. A bizarre happening in the Eastern Conference, Max. And I'll let you talk about that, because you sent me something that I was like, what? You talk about playoff scenarios, and we talk about playoff scenarios all the time, but there was some really weird odds for the Capitals to get in, and it actually happened.
Well, so the Caps were actually favored to get in of the remaining teams. The Islanders had clinched the first wild card spot, and then the second wild card spot was up for grabs between the Capitals, who ended up getting it, Detroit, and Pittsburgh / Philadelphia. But in earnest, it was between the Caps, the Red Wings, and Philly. And so the Caps and Red Wings were tied going into play on Tuesday night, and the Caps had the tiebreaker. So what the Red Wings needed was a win and a Capitals loss. Anytime. It could be an overtime loss or a regulation loss. They needed the Capitals to lose, and they needed to win. Or they needed to get 1 point with an overtime loss and have the Capitals lose. Now, Philly was playing against Washington, and Philly needed a regulation win because they needed 2 points, and they needed the Capitals, who they were playing against, to not get any points because they needed to pass the Capitals to get into the playoffs. So just in case you're keeping track, Philly's a point behind, the Caps and Red Wings are tied, and the Philly is playing the Capitals. These games are going on at the same time. The puck dropped right around the same time. Both games are in the third period right around the same time. You have the Red Wings down 4-3. They pull their goalie because they need to at least get it to overtime because they need the 2 points. They pull their goalie and they tie it up late in the period. I think it was like four seconds to go. They made it a tie game, which sent it to overtime. So the Red Wings' hopes are still alive. Philly didn't realize that the Red Wings had tied it, and the Red Wings going to overtime eliminated the Flyers, because even if the Flyers got the 2 points, the Red Wings had the tiebreaker there. So the maximum amount of points that Philly could get, even with a win in regulation, would have tied them with the Red Wings. So that game tying goal eliminated the Flyers. They didn't get the memo. They didn't know that they were unable to make the playoffs after the Red Wings scored. I don't know if somebody didn't relay it to them or what happened, but they pulled the goalie in a tie game. They were tied 1-1 with the Capitals, and they pulled their goalie because they needed to win in regulation, and they needed the Red Wings to lose in regulation. And I'm assuming that the coaching staff on the bench knew that the Red Wings were losing late in that game. They figured the Red Wings would lose, so they yanked the goalie with 3 minutes to go, and the Capitals clinch on an empty netter in a tie game. They scored with just about 3 minutes to go in the third period. And by going up 2-1, I mean, they just needed 1 point. They just needed to get to overtime. But by scoring that point and getting the 2 points, they then clinched the final spot. It was bizarre. I don't know that I've ever seen a team clinch on an empty netter in a tie game, because you never see teams pull their goalie in a tie game. It didn't make a whole lot of sense, but either way, Capitals made it to the playoffs. Red Wings, Flyers eliminated. The Penguins actually ended up finishing ahead of the Flyers. So all of that goalie pulling effort was for naught. And just a wild scenario on Tuesday night. Either way, we go into it with the winner of that, the Caps, going up against the Rangers. And look, I hope this series does not go seven games. I'm hoping that the Rangers can take care of business in four, maybe five. They've had a propensity to make things interesting in the early going, particularly last year when they lost in seven in the first round to the Devils. Now, this is a much different team. They won the President's Trophy. Filip Hedl could potentially come back. He's missed about 4 months due to a head injury, or a smattering of head injuries, I should say. But the Rangers are clearly the better team here. I think that the Capitals are a good matchup for them. And the rest of the Eastern Conference seems like it's going to be a dogfight. You have the Panthers and Lightning, who are at this point both perennial cup contenders, And then the Bruins, who won the President's Trophy last year, facing off against the Leafs, who are another really solid team. And they have a ton of really, really good skaters. And then the Canes and the Islanders. The Islanders getting hot at the end of the season, and they go into the playoffs in a state where just about every team wants to be, which is they're on a roll. They had dropped, I think, 7 in a row at one point in March, and then they turned around and won 6 in a row at the end of March and beginning of April to get hot and get into the playoffs. Now, the Hurricanes, their home ice advantage in the playoffs is well documented, so I don't know that the Isles are going to be able to get past the Canes. Also, Noah Dobson, a little bit banged up for them. He's one of their best players this year. So I'm rooting for the Islanders as much as it pains me to say. I mean, I don't like either of these teams, but I think the Isles will be their better matchup for the Rangers. I think the Canes probably win it, and then I think the Rangers will make quick work of the Capitals. I think the Panthers Lightning and Bruins Leafs series could both feasibly go 7 games. All I know is that we're going to have a lot of really good hockey in the Eastern Conference in the first round.
Yeah, these are really good matchups. The problem with hockey is that you really want to get rid of your opponents quickly, and that doesn't always happen for the Rangers. They seem to, at least most recent playoff scenarios, the Rangers have let their opponents hang around, and it doesn't bode well for them going as you go deeper in the playoffs. The more tired you get, the longer the series go, the more that contributes to it. So it would behoove you to play your best hockey. Obviously, that's what you want to do anyway, and dispatch your opponents as quickly as you can. Not always the easiest thing in the world to do. But look, the Rangers are playing well. They're playing good hockey. They won 2 in a row, 7-3-0 in their last 10. Hurricanes as well, 7-3-0 in their last 10. The Islanders, 8-1-1 in their last 10. So they're playing really good hockey. That could be a good matchup with Carolina, although Carolina is a very, very good team and has been for a while. So I expect the Islanders to at least take a game in this series, maybe 2 to send it to 6, but I don't expect them to come out of this and beat the Hurricanes, but we'll see. I think that, you know, when you're playing as good as the Islanders have been, anything can happen. And it's never, sometimes it's not the best team. It's the team that's playing the best going into the playoffs. And the Islanders are certainly one of those teams. As far as the Capitals, I don't think they're picking off the Rangers. And I think the rest of these series, like you said, I think will be, you know, good series. The Bruins and the Maple Leafs, that's going to be a tough one. The Panthers and the Lightning. Lightning are always tough going into the playoffs. So we'll see how these teams do.
Nikita Kucherov became the second player this year to notch 100 assists, which is a pretty incredible milestone. The fact that we had two players in the league do that this year, McDavid and Kucherov both, is impressive. But Kucherov just did that in the Lightning, their final game of the season.
So there you go. You know, they have two good teams. All these teams are good teams, and the Eastern Conference will be fun to watch. We head over to the Western Conference, Max, and the Dallas Stars taking on the Los Angeles Kings, and the Kings got that second wild card spot. The Winnipeg Jets taking on the Colorado Avalanche, Vancouver Canucks taking on the Predators, and the Edmonton Oilers taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, good matchups there as well. You know, Dallas is playing really good hockey. They're 111 points this season, 8-2-0. So they're playing well down the stretch. The Predators not 4-5-1 going into the playoffs. So, you know, some of these teams just not playing great. The top two teams or three teams have played okay, although the Canucks 5-4-1 in their last 10, Colorado 7-2-1. So those are the only teams that are really kind of humming, and 5-4-1 is not exactly humming, but those teams, you know, doing okay. Colorado Avalanche has a losing record going into the playoffs, and you know, at 3-5-2 in their last 10. So Western Conference, we'll see how quickly these teams can right the ship. I think the Eastern Conference games are going to be a little bit more competitive.
One matchup that I want to highlight is the Avalanche and the Jets, because I think this is one of the better goaltending matchups in the first round of the playoffs on either side of the bracket, Eastern Conference or Western Conference. You have Alexander Georgiev for the Avalanche, and he's a former Ranger who had made it clear that he was ready to get paid as a starting caliber goalie, and He has done exactly that since he has gone to Colorado. He's going to be staring across the ice at Connor Hellebuck, who is arguably the best goalie in the game right now. This is going to be, I think, whichever team has the better goaltending is probably going to win. The Avalanche added some depth at the trade deadline, and their top line of Druin McKinnon and Arturi Lehkonen is really, really good. Add Mika Rantanen at right wing. Their defense is pretty good between Devon Taves and Cale Makar, top pair. They have a really good squad. And then the Jets on the other side, the skating talent I don't think is quite as good, but with Hellebuck in net, I mean, really anything is possible. So I that's just one of the series I wanted to highlight because I think the goaltending is going to be super special there and something to watch. Now, is Georgiev going to show up here? And that's another big question mark. I mean, he has been a good goalie, even a great goalie at times this season, but he has struggled this season and he's let in recently, in spite of the Avalanche's 7-game winning streak, some easy goals. So it's going to be a question of when the lights really get their brightest, is he going to be up to the task?
And he's played well for the most part this season, and he was good for the Rangers, but the Rangers obviously had their goaltender, their number one, and so they traded him. But I think that he'll right the ship going into the playoffs, and I think that he'll play okay. And it would help if his teammates could give him a little bit more breathing room and give him a little more a line of sight when it comes to stopping some of these pucks. So hopefully he won't let in any easy ones, and they can, you know, they can figure out how to beat the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets are playing good hockey right now, 7 in a row. So obviously the streak has to end at some point, but they're playing good hockey. So that is, you know, definitely, like you said, one of those games to highlight and one of those series to highlight.
All right, Dad, let's move on. A lot of hockey ahead of us. We also have the WNBA draft in the rearview mirror. And I don't think there were any surprises there. Caitlin Clark drafted number one overall. We mentioned that last week on the pod. I think that this WNBA class has the potential to be a league-defining, league-altering draft class, similar to the NBA draft class of 2003. That was, of course, everyone remembers, the class that had LeBron, Melo, Bosch, D-Wade in the top five. Of course, the other one who was in the top five, who was not one of the aforementioned players, Darko Milicic, you know, didn't live up to the hype, but the other four guys, Hall of Famers, and David West was in this draft. He made some all-star teams, Mo Williams, Kyle Korver, just a really, really good draft. I think the WNBA draft this year has the potential to be basically what that draft was for the NBA, but for the WNBA, because after Caitlin went, you had Cameron Brink going number two overall, and the Sparks actually had two of the top four picks between Cameron Brink and the small forward from Tennessee, Rekia Jackson. So they kind of a rebuild for them, a restart, two of the top four picks. I think that add in Camilla Cardozo, and then you also have the other very, very notable players from this draft class. Angel Reese went seventh overall. She's going to be playing in Chicago. I have a feeling I'll see her at Wrigley Field at some point. She'll be invited to throw out a first pitch or something of that nature. And Paige Beckers was there. She didn't get picked, but she looked like a very, very proud mother slash best friend when her teammate Aaliyah Edwards got drafted sixth overall to the Mystics. You add in JC Sheldon, Nika Mule, the lockdown defender from UConn, pass first guard, got drafted to the Seattle Storm. A lot of really, really good players here. I think one of the bigger surprises I saw was Kate Martin, the forward from Iowa, getting drafted 18th overall. And I just honestly wasn't expecting anybody from Iowa aside from Caitlin Clark to get drafted. That's one of the things we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we talked about how it's been so miraculous that Caitlin has done what she's done because she hasn't really had WNBA caliber talent around her. Kate Martin bucking the trend and getting picked 18th overall. She's going to Las Vegas. She even said that she was just there to support Caitlin. She wasn't expecting to get picked. So a nice little storyline there. And yeah, I mean, I just think overall here, a really, really positive night for the WNBA. And I think a lot more people are going to be invested in the league this year just because of the influx of talent that we're getting.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Obviously, Caitlin Clark, the best player in the country, 28 points a game, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, shot almost 50%, 46.2% from the field. Cameron Brink shot over 50%, 52.7% from the field, but obviously as a forward, she's inside a lot, 14 points per game, grabbed 9 rebounds. So that's big for the Los Angeles Sparks. Interesting, though, the Indiana Fever getting the first round pick this year, had the first round pick last year. I'm really excited to watch Caitlin Clark play with Aaliyah Boston, because I think that Aaliyah Boston's a really good basketball player. They had 2 first round picks in the top 10 last year. Grace Berger was also picked by the Fever, and they had the second overall pick in 2022. So, the Indiana Fever should be much, much better this coming season. They picked Nelissa Smith in 2022 with the second round pick. They also have the fourth overall pick in 2022, Emily Engstler. So, look, the Indiana Fever have had very high draft picks and should be much, much better going into this upcoming season. Rekia Jackson, that you spoke about, 17 points per game, 47.9%. I forgot Camila Cardoso, who went third to the Chicago Sky, 57.5%. Obviously does a lot of her work inside as a center, 10.6 points per game, 8 rebounds a game, and a little over 1 assist per game. So that's the top 5. JC Sheldon, also close to 50%, guard from Ohio State. She goes to the Dallas Wings. So that's the WNBA draft, Max. A lot of talented ladies have gone to the WNBA this year. The Atlanta Dream picked a center who didn't play college basketball out of Australia. So we'll see how that works out for them. But the Connecticut Sun, local Layla Lacan from France. So they also go outside the country to get their first round pick. The WNBA should be a lot of fun, Max, to watch, and to watch these women mature as WNBA players. Now we've watched them in college long enough, and now we get to watch them in the WNBA. And I think that's going to be, that'll be good for women's basketball for sure.
Last topic of the day, Dad, the Masters came and went over the weekend, and I was pretty overjoyed by the fact that after one round, Bryson DeChambeau wasn't able to close the deal. Cannot stand that guy. He did not finish in the top 3. Instead, it was Scottie Scheffler picking up his second green jacket in 3 years. And it wasn't a wire-to-wire finish, but it was a pretty convincing win. When Scottie is putting decently, he is just far and away the best golfer on tour, because his ball striking is excellent. His play off the tee is excellent, and just does not surprise me at all that he won the Masters. He was the odds on favorite to win it before the tournament started. I think the probably most impressive finish was Ludvig Åberg, born in 1999, so younger than me, 24 years old, played college at Texas Tech, storming onto the scene with a second place finish in his first ever major appearance as a professional. Very, very impressive performance from him. And I mean, it was a convincing win, like I said, for Scheffler. At the end of the day, Åberg finishing second, Scheffler up by 4 strokes. It was closer than that. I mean, he won by 4 strokes, but it was closer than that in the last round. And then 3 gentlemen tied for third: Tommy Fleetwood, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. So a fun event. Bryson DeChambeau, Cam Smith, Xander Schauffele, Tyrrell Hatton, Cam Young, Will Zalatoris rounding out the top 10. 3 gentlemen tied for ninth, so that's why there are 11 names there. But either way, another successful year at Augusta. It's always a really fun tournament to watch. There's really nothing more pristine than this course at Augusta. And I'm never going to be good enough to play it, but it's fun to imagine that I would be able to at some point.
Yeah, it was an exciting tournament to watch and keep an eye on. Obviously, like you said, DeChambeau had the lead after the first round, but couldn't hold on, and he had a disastrous third round, I guess, and did not play well. But Scheffler was very, very steady, finished at 11 under, and was, you know, pretty stellar coming down the stretch and not unflappable. Åberg really, really played well. Tommy Fleetwood also, and Max Homa, you know, and Colin Morikawa. I enjoyed watching these guys, and, you know, some of the golf shots they make are just ridiculous, but, you know, only I could dream of making shots like that with a golf club. But, you know, I think Scheffler was rated very highly when it came to the betting line, and he obviously came through for whoever bet on him and takes home another green jacket. And look, you have to say that golf right now, Max, is kind of wide open. There's no dominant player or players. There's a bunch of guys that are there every single week. I mean, you know Fleetwood, you know Homa, you know Morikawa, DeChambeau, Scheffler. Those names are there a lot. Zalatoris has been there a bunch.
DeChambeau's not really there because he's on the LIV Tour, but
right, but he's playing in the Masters.
In the majors. Yeah.
Yeah. So you obviously know the name. And but these guys are, you know, I guess because some of the guys have left for LIV, it's a little more wide open. But it's fun to watch these guys that don't win all the time or hadn't won all the time and, you know, fight for who's going to be victorious week after week. So, you know, golf is, I think golf has turned a corner, and we'll see where it goes from here with LIV and, you know, the PGA. But, you know, I think golf is enjoyable, and I'm glad you're not hearing a lot of the infighting that you heard about LIV and the PGA fighting all the time. So it's nice to see golf sort of back at a place that's not arguing and fighting and trying to figure out how do we make golf better. I think golf's pretty good, and these guys are pretty good at golf. And I enjoyed watching as much as this Masters as I could.
One silly question for you before we go. One of my buddies sent me a TikTok that posed a hypothetical question that I will now pose to you. If you entered the Masters, except the rule was that you started every hole on the green from the furthest point away from the hole, do you think you could win the tournament? So you don't have to have any irons. It's just you and your putter, and every hole you just start at the furthest point away from the hole on the green. And remember, the pin moves, so you're not making the same putts every day. Would you be able to win the Masters if that was the case? And everybody else has to play a normal round, start at the tee box, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think
I know my answer. I know my answer.
I'm thinking, you know, the par threes, the greens aren't as big, but I'm trying to think of the par fives. And, you know, sometimes it takes these guys two. So you're two strokes ahead already. And if you can putt and get it close and make two putts, could you win the Masters? I'd have to practice my putting a little bit, but I really want to say yes, because my putting isn't that bad, but I probably couldn't is probably the right answer.
I think my answer is an unequivocal no. I think I would have like a 20% chance to make the cut. Putting is the worst part of my game by far, but I looked it up, and you're starting on average 80 feet away from the hole or more.
That I didn't realize.
There's no way on earth that I am three putting from 80 feet. Like, I might be able to three putt from 80 feet on the greens at Augusta like four times over the course of 72 holes. But I think most of the time it's four putts and probably mix in a couple five putts there. If you want to win, you basically have to average a little under four putts per hole. I don't think that's happening. So I would say for me, it's a no. For an actual good golfer, they probably could do it. But for me, definitely not.
I think with a little bit of practice from that distance, because look, if you're putting from 80 feet, you want to get it to within 10 feet. So it's a matter of getting enough juice behind the ball to get it within that 10 or 5 foot circle. Because I think you could make a 10 or a 5 or 10 foot putt on a pretty consistent basis. So it's a matter
I don't know
of
about consistent, but I could make a 10 footer like probably 25% of the time.
So even still, that's only three putts. It's that first putt that you can't baby, but it's also, if you're going downhill, you can't give it too much. Some of these things roll for a while. So that's a really good question. But I think with some practice, I think you could. I really think you could, because you're cutting off all the strokes with all your other clubs. Now, I might take out my wedge and chip it from 80 feet, but I think that if you practiced enough and you were able to give it enough juice from 80 feet, I'd have to say it's a definite possibility.
Yeah, I'm sticking with no, but I'm glad that you're confident in yourself.
I was confident in your putting, not mine.
No, I'm glad you have confidence in me. I don't. My putting is bad.
But you can always practice and get better.
Yeah. This has been another episode of Podcast by Committee with Andrew and Max Brill. Make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, or any other podcast platform. We're there. And rate and review us on Apple while you're at it. It'll only take a couple of seconds, so head on over there and leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us, we're on Instagram at @podcast_by_committee and Twitter at @podbycommittee. Or you can reach out to us via email, hosts@podcastbycommittee.com.
Thanks again for listening to Podcast by Committee. Thanks again to Mason Pettit for the introduction, Kevin McLeod for the music. Shout out to Preet Kliegerman for our graphics. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, stay safe.